All right, everybody, remember now we were in Matthew 25 last week. We took note of the fact that there comes a time when the Lord gathers everyone before the throne of glory and separates the sheep from the goats, and then assigns or rewards with the destinies that are present. Now, in Matthew 25. There are three, there's a question about whether the last one is meant to be a parable or more of an illustration, but there are three scenes. Each, and of course this happens in close connection with the Lord's hour when he's offered up for us. This happens during that last week in Jerusalem. And these three, passages have a special relevance to the Lord's people and their attitudes toward what His judgment toward them means. These are passages that take on maybe a greater significance when we understand them as His word to His own people about what their attitudes need to be toward that great day, as we sometimes sing about it. So I want for us to read the passages and then study them by just taking note of the review or the questions that we've raised on this outline. And I don't know if I'm very good at just following a plan like this, but we'll try to do that today. Let's start with the first one of these is the parable of the five wise and the five foolish virgins or young women or maidens. And this picture has to do with the practices in their culture with regard to a wedding, where the betrothal will have taken place and the bride and the groom were considered married, but they have not begun to live together yet. The groom goes and prepares the place where they will live, and there is a marriage feast prepared. When the place is ready and the feast and all of that is ready, then the groom comes for his bride and takes her from her father's home to what will be their home and the great celebration that goes along with it. And the thing is, this wasn't the kind of thing which could have a printed announcement made up and sent out with regard to a formal time and a particular hour. It had to be done when things were ready. And so that practice is in the background of this. So let's read Matthew 25 verses 1 through 13 to start with here and thinking about this. Tim, do you mind to read that passage for us?
Then the kingdom of heaven will be comparable to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were prudent. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the prudent took oil and flask along with their lamps. Now while the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. But at midnight there was a shout, "Behold, the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all these virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the prudent answered, "No, there will not be enough for us, as you too go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourselves." And while they were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. Later the other virgins also came saying, "Lord, Lord, open up for us." But he answered, "Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Be on the alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour."
Okay, now, the virgins or the maidens in this passage represent the unmarried, or the unmarried friends of the bride. And they turn out to be the characters in this passage for us to pay attention to. Now, just asking the question, short answers, were all the maidens in this story entitled, ideally on this occasion, to meet the bridegroom? Were all of them a part of the story in that way?
Yes,
they are all friends of the bride and the bridegroom, and all of them are allowed to be out here waiting to meet him and anticipating it and expecting him and so forth. So who is represented by these 10 virgins in this story? This is an important part of the picture, and I want to make sure we look at this. Who, and I'll give you a clue. We're told straight off at the beginning of this who these 10 maidens will represent.
The kingdom of heaven.
All right. So who would that be?
Convert Christians.
All right. It would be Christians. It would be the church in this story. Yeah, so if you think about this, the church is not represented in just the five wise ones. Does everybody see this? This is a message to us to tell us that we may be like these wise ones or these foolish ones when the Lord comes for the wedding feast. And that's the point. Now, what was the mistake of the five who did not go into the feast when the time came?
Unprepared.
All right. They took their lamps. Now, the lamps would be, remember, and probably an olive oil-based lamp. It would be more like a dish with oil and a wick in it. And they took their lamps, not knowing exactly when the bridegroom would come, but what did they not take?
Extra oil.
All right, they did not take extra oil. So they didn't take enough to supply their lamp. And so when the bridegroom did show up, or when he didn't show up when they maybe expected and their lights began to go out, what did they begin to ask? All right, you other folks, give to us some of yours. And did the others not give of their oil because they were hard-hearted or selfish or uncompassionate or what? No, there's some, that's right. There's some things you can't, there's some things nobody else can give you. That's the point. And one of those things is the idea in this passage here. So the mistake was that they did not make personal preparation so that they would be ready when the bridegroom came. All right. So what is the lesson in this for Christians with regard to the judgment of the Lord? Be ready, not get ready, but be ready. Anybody else say it differently while you're doing your homework? Do you see a different way to make the main point of this passage? What does it mean to be ready?
You've got to know the difference between truth,
all right,
and the theories of men.
All right. That will be a huge thing, especially with the next parable, but with this one also. The faithfulness. The idea that you have shown yourself to count your first priority being ready for the marriage feast. That idea is a significant aspect of this. If you really look at this, what really is the one job that the maidens have with regard to this marriage feast? Do they have to prepare it? Do they have to buy a ticket? Do they have to earn their way into it? They just had to be ready when he came, right? So that's the. So what is the wrong that they have committed that we call it not being ready? It's simply that they have not valued the privilege of being at the wedding feast. That hasn't been their first priority. They haven't attended to that idea. So what are some practical things that we have to do to be like the five who were wise? Barbara has already said one of them. We have to make sure that we do our best to be true to the Lord's will and His own ways, His own word. Tell me some other practical things that we can do to illustrate that our main job is to be there when He comes to take His people into the marriage feast.
We used to sing back in our clock read today, the old song, "O Careless Soul,"
yes,
"Prepare to Meet Thy God."
Yeah.
It starts out, "O careless soul, why do you linger?"
Yeah.
You know, so I think sometimes just we have to work against becoming careless.
All right.
Day to day.
Which, what is it? The law of entropy, where we run down, we lose energy, and so we have to battle that natural tendency, like with these maidens, to grow tired, to grow sleepy, to let the light go out, and so on. So, tell me some other practical things. How do we do that, Ruth?
Well, I think the first obvious thing would be don't let her light go out.
All right.
So, light of the world.
All right. So our kids sing, "This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine," and that's that. Maybe that needs to be an adult song too. In this passage here, you think about this: what are the personal things in your spiritual life that nobody else can do for you? You can't draw on someone else's.
Guard against the temptations.
All right, the temptations. There are some things that you're going to have to meet with faithfulness to what you know God has already said that nobody can do for you. What about things? Okay, Debbie.
I was just going to say developing your relationship with God. All
right.
Things like reading your Bible and concentrating on the things of God and not things of this world.
All right. Prayer would be one of the things. Prayer or placing yourself around brothers and sisters or in an environment which will be conducive to your growth and development. Helping each other keep alert. That sort of thing. Involving yourself in service is a thought that leads to the next thing. But the Lord's application of this is made in verse 13. How did He say it?
Watch.
Give me some synonyms for that word, watch.
Alert.
Be alert. Pay attention. You ever heard that one? Pay attention.
Mine says give strict attention and be cautious and active.
Alright, strict attention and cautious and active. The idea being earnest would be a New Testament word that would fit with that. Alright, now the second one of these stories comes up in verse 14 through 30. And this is the so-called parable of the talents. The thing that to be aware of is talent is a weight of that was used to measure the amount of whatever metal or precious material it was. There would be a certain weight for a talent of gold or a certain weight for a talent of silver and so forth. So bear in mind, this is one of the passages which has been so meaningful in the English language that we have developed a term drawn from this picture to make it mean something else. And I think that's an interesting thing. Matthew 25, 14 through 30. Becky, would you like to read that for us?
Sure. For it is just like a man about to go on a journey who called his own slaves and entrusted his possessions to them. And to one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, and to another 1, each according to his own ability. And he went on his journey. Immediately, the one who received the 5 talents went and traded with them and gained 5 more talents. In the same manner, the one who had received 2 talents gained 2 more. But he who received the 1 talent went away and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those slaves came and settled accounts with them. And the one who had received the 5 talents came up and brought 5 more talents, saying, Master, you entrusted 5 talents to me. See, I have gained 5 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. The one also who had received 2 talents came up and said, Master, you entrusted to me 2 talents. See, I have gained 2 more talents. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful slave. You were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. And the one who also received the one talent came and said, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you do not scatter seed. And I was afraid and went away and hid your talent in the ground. See, you have what is yours. But his master answered and said to him, You wicked, lazy slave, you knew that I reap where I did not sow and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have put my money in the bank, and on my arrival I would have received my money back with interest. Therefore, take away the talent from him and give it to the one who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has shall more be given, and he shall have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away, and cast out the worthless slave into the outer darkness. In that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth.
All right. In a world where we Christians are confronted with a culture that is focused very much on personal enjoyment, personal fulfillment, and personal security, these types of passages in the Lord's teaching are especially meaningful. In this passage, do all of the servants, all 3 of these servants, represent people in the kingdom? Yes. Even the 1 talent man, right? So the Lord... The world has its obligation to the judge of all the earth, that's true. But the Lord wants citizens of the kingdom to realize that we also will give account of what we did with the privileges that were provided to us at great cost to himself. So now, upon what, in this passage here, what does the master give to each one of these servants?
His
something of his own. All right, what else?
Whatever he's capable of taking care of.
All right. He gives as much of his own goods as he considers that servant to have the ability to use or to take care of And for what purpose is he giving these things to these servants? All right, for them to use in his service or to make a profit for him. That task was the economic system, or that setup was the economic system of their time, and it turns out to be especially meaningful to us. Now, one fellow, he gives five talents to. Another fellow, he gives two talents to. And the third fellow, he gives one talent to. So everybody receives something. Nobody receives more than he could handle. And in each case, they are stewards in the sense that they are handling something that belongs to the master and not merely their own private thing. So what do these gifts represent in this picture? They are all right. I think all right. They would represent abilities or opportunities, or what about even goods? Even that, we almost totally adapt the word talent to describe what kind of abilities, what kind of gifts, what kind of things that a person could do, what he's capable of doing, his special talents and so forth that other people don't have. Of course, that would be included, but in this passage, it's not limited to that. Now, what would you say is the main message the Lord wants us who are Christians to get from this particular parable?
Use your resources, whatever it is you have, for Him.
All right, that as a Christian, each one of us is responsible for using whatever resources we have, whether they're abilities or circumstances in life or positions or whatever they are, for the cause of His kingdom. Would that, anybody add to that?
I think the stress is also on the fact that it's not ours, it's His to begin with.
All right, it's still His, right? And so we use it that way.
But on that point, didn't He turn around and give it to them? He didn't take it.
All right,
He did one.
The man said, "Here's your two talents. I've gained you two more." The owner rewards him. How? Ultimately, he said, you take this, the one talent from the guy who made no use of it because he thought so little of the owner, and you give it to the one who has 10 talents, verse 28 says. Meaning that the Lord looks at things a little differently than we sometimes do in our world, where we think that what needs to happen is, where poor management has occurred, then that one should be given more. It's a different economy in the Lord's kingdom or the Lord's service here when it comes to facing judgment and judgment among His people or in His kingdom. And you notice now, what is the outcome of His coming and calling the servants into account? The one who had five gained five more. What did the owner say to him?
He'll put him in charge of much.
All right. Well done. Good and faithful servant. The five wise virgins were brought into the marriage feast, and the door was shut. The good stewards here have been faithful over a little, and they are set over much, and they are told to enter into the joy of their master. Can you think of any words that would be more welcome than those? Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little, I'll set you over much. Enter into the joy of your Lord. What a wonderful thing. On the other hand, the one talent fella loses what he has because, you know, the saying, what is it? It's true.
Use it, you lose it.
It's right, Carl. It's true with everything. Use it or lose it. And he lost it, right? And so the idea that you see there. Now, I want to touch on this other one before we're completely gone today. Matthew 25 with the sheep and the goats. Remember the story. He says to those on his right, the king will say to them, he says to them, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, you came to me." The righteous will answer and say, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you to drink?" And he'll see, "When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the Lord will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me." Now, I've asked a question on your paper. How are members of the church represented in two different ways in this passage? And I'm interested in how this passage is different from the first two we have been reading in terms of the judgment that's extended here. In the first passage, who did all 10 of the maidens represent? Citizens of the kingdom. In the second passage, who did all 3 of the servants who received talents represent?
Servants of the Lord.
In this passage, though, who is gathered before the throne of his glory?
All nations.
So in this passage, there is a judgment picture that does not only involve the citizens of the kingdom. And in this case, the citizens of the kingdom are pictured as being among those who are judged, but the judgment is offered on the basis of how the least of these, the Lord's brothers, have been treated. So the Christians are pictured as among those who are judged, but also Christians are pictured as people for whom the accounts are settled ultimately. And that's an interesting and important thing. Upon what basis does the Lord separate the blessed from the cursed? And I've only read you the blessed. The cursed is the direct opposite of this.
Those who did things for others.
All right. Whether people have shown a heart like he did toward their fellow man, and in this case, especially toward their brothers and sisters in the Lord's family. Why are both groups surprised by the outcome of this judgment? All right, I think you're on the right track.
I don't know how to say it.
Yeah, we'll say it this way. The idea is that they are surprised, both of them, because this was done as a normal way of life to them, and it was not they didn't realize that what they were doing for others, the Lord took as if it were done toward Him. This is not what I'm trying to get at, the idea that this is not saying that the only thing that matters in judgment is whether we've been considered to be compassionate to our fellow man. That's not the point that's being made here. You have to put it together with the first two passages, and you have to consider who is being judged in this passage. That's not to take away anything from the significance of compassion toward the least of these, the Lord's brothers. You put this with the previous two parables. What lesson does Christ want us to learn about judgment? And here's what I'm getting at. Our first priority is to be prepared. We prepare by using the abilities and the opportunities the Lord has given us in His service. And we use the abilities and the opportunities He's given us in His service by
making it the way of our
life. Making it the way we treat our fellow man. Okay. So this last one takes the church beyond merely what we do when we meet, or what is usually recognized as religious service, to being a certain kind of people who do things in the way we treat our neighbors because we're a certain kind of people and the Lord has made us that way. And we get ready to meet Him in that way. All right, did I let both bells pass sometime back? Thank you guys for your patience. I hope you'll be rewarded when that good day comes.